Welcome to the weekly sermon podcast of Valley Grove Baptist Church. We are thankful you stopped by to hear from God's Word, to grow closer to Him, and to be inspired to reach your area of influence. All right, let's find our Bibles this morning, and we're going to turn to 1 Samuel chapter 1. 1 Samuel chapter 1. We're going to finish chapter 1 and begin chapter 2 this morning as we are just getting underway, looking, going kind of story by story through the book of Samuel. Last week, if you weren't here, let's kind of catch up where we were. We talked about Samuel 1 through 20, 1 through 20, and we saw that we didn't really meet Samuel at all until the very end, and then it was just that he was born. We started out with the story of Hannah, Samuel's mother, and his father Elkanah. And we saw how through Hannah's tragedy and anxiety and just depression and all of that, that God worked a miracle in her life. In fact, we concluded kind of the main idea of that story in those first 20 verses is that God often works the most in the deepest tragedies of our life. We saw that it was in the moment of desperation in Hannah's life that that's when God showed up and showed out the most in her life. And so today we're going to pick up that story and we're going to be about a year later and we're going to see if Hannah follows through with her commitment to the Lord. You'll remember that we saw that Hannah prayed and asked the Lord for a son. She was barren. We read that the Lord had closed her womb, and we saw that the Lord opened her womb and gave her a son, Samuel. But remember, when she prayed, we saw that she said, "Hey, Lord, if you will give me a son, I will give him back to you, and he will be yours forever," right? So we got to pick up on that part of the story and see how that story plays out. So we saw first that Hannah, God works most often in our deepest moments of tragedy. And so kind of the application for us was that we should learn to embrace those and pray through them, like Hannah did, because God is always there for us every step of the way. So what's going to happen next? Well, let's jump in and let's see. We're going to read kind of to the end of chapter 1, and then we'll come back and talk about it, and then we'll read a little bit in chapter 2. Then the man Elkanah and his house, so that's everybody, went up to offer to the Lord the yearly sacrifice and pay his vow. So it's like a year later. But Hannah did not go up, for she said to her husband, "As soon as the child is weaned, I will bring him, so that he may appear in the presence of the Lord and dwell there forever." Okay, verse 23. Elkanah, her husband, said to her, "Do what seems best to you. Wait until you have weaned him. Only may the Lord establish his word." So the woman remained and nursed her son until she weaned him. 24. And when she had weaned him, she took up with her along with a three-year-old bull. Now, there is some textual verity here. It could be 1 3-year-old bull or 3 1-year-old bulls. Okay? And it's probably 3 1-year-old bulls. All right. And she bought an ephah of flour. That's like 10 gallons of flour or 10 pounds of flour. And a skin of wine, that's literally an animal skin made into a jug with wine in it. That's how they carried wine. And she brought him to the house of the Lord at Shiloh. And the child was young. All right. And they slaughtered the bull and they brought the child to Eli. And she said, "Oh, my Lord, as you live, my Lord, I am the woman who is standing here in your presence praying to the Lord. For this child I prayed, and the Lord has granted me my petition that I made to him." All right, one more. "Therefore, I have lent him to the Lord. As long as he lives, he has lent to the Lord." And he worshiped the Lord there. All right, so let's stop right there. Let's go back to the front, and we'll kind of walk down. All right, so again, we're a year later, and Elkanah is leading his family, just like we saw last week, to go and worship and sacrifice and pay his vow to the Lord, so to speak. And so again, we see Elkanah's righteousness as a father leading his family to worship the Lord. All right. But when he comes to Hannah, she's like, "Hey, I'm not going to go this year. I'm going to wait and I'll go when Samuel is weaned, and then I'll present him to the Lord at Eli, and he'll basically stay there. And so the question is, well, why didn't she go? Well, one, if you kind of do the math, Samuel's probably like an infant. I mean, at best, he's 3 months old. So it kind of makes sense, right? I mean, she's not really going to give a three-month-old and say, hey, guys, I know y'all are priests at the temple. Here's an infant. Have fun. Right? That probably wouldn't be wise. So she waits. And so she waits until she's weaned him. Now, the big question is, how long is that take? Well, the text really doesn't tell us, but it just tells us in verse 24 that when she had weaned him, she took him up with all of this stuff. So best estimates is he's probably, sorry ladies, three. Right? And it, yeah, right? He's probably around three, and there's reasons for that. We'll talk, if you want to know the reasons, we'll talk about it after church. All right? But it's probably around three. And so three-year-old Samuel, Hannah, and the family are probably, now I know it says, and she took him, but it's probably the entire group is going up again to the yearly sacrifice. So it's 3 years later. So from the time of chapter one till the time of our story where they go up to the temple and Samuel stays in the temple, it's about 4 years, give or take, right? And so in verse 24, she goes up to the temple, or goes up to the tabernacle technically, and takes Samuel with her along with the entire entourage of people. So the entire family, remember her rival Peninnah and all her kids, everybody's going up. Elkanah's taking everybody up. And it says that she takes the bull, right, or the bulls. It's probably more likely that she took 3 1-year-old bulls, because if you get really into the weeds of Levitical law, which we'll talk a little bit more about next week when we look at the last half of chapter 2, you'll see that all of these animals that are sacrificed, you have like grain and wine offerings that go along with them. And if you do the math, the amount of flour that she takes and wine is equivalent to what you would need for 3 sacrifices, not for 1. Regardless, here's the point. This is an extremely expensive sacrificial gift to the Lord. Now, again, I've never raised cows. I know many of you have. I had a very ignorant view of how cow ranching worked. I thought you just threw them out there and let them go. And I mean, they eat grass. Like, what else are they going to do, you know? I have quickly learned over the last 9 years that is not how that works. And think about it. So those of you who have cows, think about what it would take for you to raise 3 bulls that were perfect, then to haul them on a journey, walking them for miles and miles to Shiloh. Because remember, you're not putting them in the back of your trailer and hauling them, you're walking them. That had to be fun, right? And then you're going to get to the temple and you're going to say, here you go, Lord, these are yours. That's a huge investment. What does that tell us? It tells us a couple things. Number one, it tells us that Elkanah and his family probably had the means to offer that kind of sacrifice, right? Let me kind of caveat real quick. Let me jump to the New Testament real quick to show you the difference. Another acceptable sacrifice, if you were on the poorer end of the spectrum, was pigeons. If you remember the story of Jesus' birth, when he's of age and Mary and Joseph take baby Jesus to offer a sacrifice because he's the firstborn, do you remember what they give? Pigeons. You want to know why? That's all they can afford. But Elkanah and his family and Hannah, they have the means, so what do they give? They give the best. So they have the means to give the best, and so what do? They don't scrounge, and they don't be like, oh, well, we're just going to go cheap here. No, they give the best that they can get, which is 3 bulls and this large amount of flour and an entire skin of wine, and they give it to the Lord. Now, again, we'll talk a little bit more about sacrifice next week because it comes up in the story, but it's probably, depending on what type of sacrifice it is, they may not have like sacrificed the entire animal on the altar, but what happens to the meat is the priest gets some, and then you have like a big feast. But if you've got, you know, multiple kids and you've brought other family members and everybody there and you got three bulls, like, that's a huge barbecue. And that's probably what's going on here is they sacrifice to the Lord, and then what meat is left over, they have a huge barbecue. I mean, sounds great to me, right? Because it is a moment of celebration for them because they are giving their son over to the Lord to remain in the Lord's service forever. And Hannah's very specific about that. She says it like she reminds Eli who she is. Hey, remember, guy? I'm the guy who you thought was a drunken woman, who was a worthless woman. But remember, I was praying to the Lord and bam, here's the kid. And he's now three. And remember I said that I was going to give him to the Lord forever? Well, guess what? He's yours now. I'm giving him to the Lord. And so this is a huge celebratory moment, but was also probably, moms, probably a moment of great kind of anxiety as well and joy and, oh, what am I going to do? This is the son that I've prayed for, but now I've got to give him up and all of this. And so what Hannah does is amazing. She breaks out into this, it's called in my Bible, you know, the little subtitle is Hannah's Prayer. It's more like a song, but really it's maybe even more like a psalm, like the Psalms, the book of Psalms. It fits very well with like David's Psalms and the other authors of the Psalms. So let's read that starting in chapter 2, verse 1, and we're going to go through verse 11. And Hannah prayed and said, "My heart exults in the Lord. My horn is exalted in the Lord. My mouth derides my enemies because I rejoice in your salvation." Verse 2. "There is none holy like the Lord. For there is none beside you. There is no rock like our God." Verse 3. "Talk no more so very proudly. Let not arrogance come from your mouth. For the Lord is a God of knowledge, and by Him actions are weighed. The bows of the mighty are broken, but the feeble bind on strength. Those who were full have hired themselves out for bread, but those who were hungry have ceased to hunger. The barren has borne seven, but she who has many children is forlorn. The Lord kills and brings to life. He brings down to Sheol," that's like the underworld in the Old Testament, the equivalent of Hades in the New Testament, "and raises up," verse 7. "The Lord makes poor and makes rich. He brings low and He exalts. He raises up the poor from the dust. He lifts the needy from the ash heap to make them sit with princes and inherit a seat of honor. For the pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and on them He has set the world." Verse 9. "He will guard the feet of His faithful ones, but the wicked shall be cut off in darkness. For not by might shall a man prevail. The adversaries of the Lord shall be broken to pieces. Against them He will thunder in heaven. The Lord will judge the ends of the earth. He will give strength to His king and exalt the horn of His anointed." Last verse. "Then Elkanah went home to Ramah, and the boy was ministering to the Lord in the presence of Eli the priest." All right, that's where next week's story will kind of pick up next week and the next. All right, so let's talk real quick. Now, we could walk kind of like verse by verse through Hannah's prayer, but I think it'd be more beneficial if we look at it from a macro level, because what we see here actually in this passage is very, very much going to play out through the rest of the book. In some sense, Hannah's prayer serves as an outline for the action that's going to take place later in the book. So let me give you kind of four big ideas that are in Hannah's prayer. Here's the first one. In verse number 2, she says that God is unique. God is unique. In verses 3 and 10, so kind of at the beginning and then at the end, she talks about God's judgment. Then in verses 4 and 5 and 7 through 9, she talks about God's ability to reverse the positions of people. Remember, it says the poor are now raised up. Those who don't have now have, and those who have don't have. And so God's ability to reverse the positions of people. But the center of this psalm, song, prayer is verse number 6. Ren, let's read verse number 6 again. Let's look at it. Now, okay, just hold on, because you got to think about what is the point behind what she's saying. The Lord kills and brings to life. He brings down to Sheol. Here's what she's saying. God is sovereign. So if you look at this passage, it kind of has a stair-step approach. For those of you who were here on Wednesday, a couple weeks ago, we looked at the Psalms and we talked about this is a unique Hebrew literary device called a chiasm, where the point is, the actual main point is not the beginning or the end, but it's actually in the middle. And this is an example of it. Because the entire song is about God's sovereignty. God is God and nobody else is. He is holy like no other. You want to give me, I told you just a minute ago, these themes are going to play out over and over and over again through the book. Let me give you an example. In a few weeks, we're going to read chapter 5, where the Ark of the Covenant gets stolen by the Philistines. And they take it back to their temple. And I don't want to go into all the details because, you know, I still got to preach a sermon about it, right? But you'll see in chapter 5 that the God of the Bible, the God of Israel, is vastly different than the God of the Philistines. There's no one like Him. And we will see that over and over and over and over again. What about this idea that God reverses the positions of people? We're going to meet this guy, David. Do y'all remember where David is when Samuel, this Samuel right here who's a kid, when he's like, hey, I'm looking to come anoint the next king of Israel. Do you remember what Jesse, his dad, says? You mean that guy? I'm paraphrasing very loosely here. You mean David, the youngest kid? He's out watching the sheep. Aren't you sure you don't want my oldest son? Look at him. He's nice. Handsome, strong. But who does God choose? David. What happens to the guy who they make king first, who's the tall, like a head taller than everybody else and looks like a king? What happens to Saul? Turns out to be a disaster in the end, doesn't he? And we see this idea that God raises people up who you wouldn't think He would raise up. You wouldn't think David kills Goliath, would you? David has a slingshot. Goliath is like 9 feet tall. I remember at VBS one year, years ago, I think it was at another church, years ago, we one of the VBS stories with David and Goliath. And so one of the creative crafty ladies made Goliath, like out of like multiple pieces of like that poster board paper. And I was like, boy, 9 feet tall, that's kind of tall. That's really tall. And I mean, she made him up. I mean, look like what you would think, spear and all this. And kids took balled up paper and threw it at him. That was hilarious. Seeing little pre-Kers try to throw paper balls at Goliath or whatever. But I mean, you imagine little bitty old David. I have affinity for David. Little bitty old David against 9 foot tall Goliath with a slingshot. That shouldn't happen. But it does. Right? And so we see these themes over and over and over again. And in fact, we see that Hannah's story, not just her prayer, but her story mirrors the future of the Israelite story in Samuel as well. For example, God chooses Hannah from the backwood country parts of the nation to become the mother of the guy who's going to be the kingmaker for Israel. Just like God chooses Israel from the backwaters of the Middle East to become the regional player in the region, to be His people. God chooses Hannah to be Samuel's mom again, who's going to be the king. Just like God chooses David, the last in this line of way the text reads, like, you know, handsome, good-looking guys who would be king, and he's like, just the shepherd boy. But God chooses David to be the one through whom the Messiah would come. And you see not only her words, but her story mirrors what God is going to do through Israel. So, I was thinking this week, and I was trying to narrow this story down into like one main idea. and then to kind of give you some application points, right? Because we always want to end with application. Because this, you know, we don't want this. I never want Sunday mornings to be just like school class, right? You know, kind of when you like you're sitting in algebra and you're like, when am I ever going to use this, you know, quadratic formula? Like, when am I ever going to need to know mass to mole in chemistry? Like, ever outside of this class? Never, right? So we never want to get there. But as I was looking at this story, there are so many different directions you could go in. For example, we could talk about on Father's Day how Elkanah is clearly in spiritual leadership in his family. We could talk about how children are blessing from the Lord. Clearly, this story is about how children are blessing from the Lord. We could discuss the personal or corporate implications of what it really means for God to be like none other. There is no rock like. What does that mean for our lives? This story also clearly attacks modern sensibilities about fate and luck. Right? No, there's not luck. God clearly was the one behind this. However, through all of this, I think if we're going to narrow this story down to one main idea, here it is. Hannah serves as the example of what it looks like to rightly respond to God's action in our life. Let me say that again. Hannah serves as the example of what the right response to God's action looks like. Remember back, so 2 weeks ago, I went back and looked in my, and I literally copy and pasted. 2 weeks ago in the first sermon we did, we said that the author's purpose for writing the same or collecting all of the stories and editing it into the book of Samuel, the purpose was to call the righteous back to covenant faithfulness. Hannah is a great example of exactly what that looks like. What does it look like for a righteous person to, when they see God work, how should they respond? So let's ask the question. How does Hannah respond generally to when she sees God work in her life? Well, here's the first thing she does, okay? I got three ideas real quick. She stewarded the resources of her blessing. When she saw God work in her life through giving her a son, you know what she didn't say? Thank you, God. Now it's mine. What did she do? She stewarded those resources with open hands and say, Lord, it's not mine, it's yours. Years ago, I was probably a teenager, and we had, back then in those years, we had the Middle Georgia Preaching Conference, Second Baptist in One Earth. And so we had some of the big name preacher guys who kind of traveled around and did evangelism, did revivals and all that, and they would come, and it was like a Sunday night through Wednesday. It was a preaching conference. So it wasn't like worship service revival. You know, we would have on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we would have like a short little opening, few songs, and a guy would preach. We'd have another song, and then another guy would preach. So it was like, whoo, it was great, right? It was good. But listen to what one of the guys says, and I've never forgot it. You know, we talk about open hand, closed hand. You know, we should come to the Lord with open hands, not closed hands. It's not mine, it's yours. Well, here's how he put it. Very bluntly. He said, none of us are owners. We are all managers of the gifts God gives us. Think about that. You don't own anything. Now, the bank may say you own it. The people you pay taxes to may say you own it. Right? But the reality is, it's not ours to begin with. It's His. He just lets us use it for a little while, right? Because let's be real. All of us aren't going to live, none of us are going to live forever, right? So one day it ain't going to be yours, no way. It's going to be your kids or your grandkids, and then they're going to get tired of it. They're going to sell it off to somebody, and you'll roll over in your grave and be like, oh, I can't believe they sold that. Family heirloom, right? And so while we're here, we're not owners, we're managers. What does Hannah do? She manages the resources, specifically Samuel. Well, here's the second thing she does. She speaks theologically correct about the situation. What does she say? She doesn't say, hey, look what I did this week in staff meeting. I don't even know how this came up. We watched a video. The video quality is terrible because it's like from 18 years ago, right? So listen, y'all young folks, y'all not going to have any inkling of an idea of what I'm talking about. But you people my age and up, you will, okay? you know, back when you actually like watched cable TV, you didn't stream stuff, and there would be commercials for like CDs. Young folks, a CD is called, it's a compact disc, right? It's this circle thing that you put in your it played music, okay? You know, y'all young folks don't know what those are, right? But CD, and you remember how they would come on, there'd be an advertisement for like, you could call this number, you called a number, like, and they sent you stuff, right? And it'd be for a CD, and it'd be like, call now, and da-da-da-da. Well, here's, it's great. You should go Google it, or YouTube it. It's called Me Worship, right? And it's parodies of church songs. So instead of Lord, I lift your name on high, we'll have to watch the video one day. Instead of Lord, I lift your name on high, it's I lift my name on high. Instead of I love to sing your praises, it's I love to sing my praises. And it's a whole slew of, it is great in a terrible way, of all of these parodies of classic songs. You'll know, they even have, and if you call now, you can get a Christmas album that's all about you worship at Christmas. But it sounds funny, but look at me. The reality is, it's true. Because if we're not careful, God will bless us and grant us all of these things, and we'll be like Tom Hanks on Castaway. Look at what I have created. Right? You know, it's, look what I did. I put in all the hard work. I did this. I used the resources I did. No. God did it. You just happen to be the recipient. Right? What does Hannah do? She doesn't say, I created this baby. I raised this thing up to 3 years. No, she didn't say any of that. What does she say? You did it. It's all about Him. All about God, not about her. So she should be theologically correct. Here's the third thing she does. She gives unfettered praise to God for His work in her life and in her sphere of influence. So when we look at this passage, I don't think we can come to any other conclusion, but the main idea is that Hannah serves as an example of what the right response to God's action in our life look like. So where does that leave us today? If we're going to apply this lesson, this passage to our life, what does it look like for us to apply this in our life? Number one, we need to come open-handed to God, not close-handed to God. We need to manage and say, hey, Lord, it's yours. Help me just to use it the best way that I can. I don't own anything. It's yours to use. You just direct me, right? That's one thing. The second thing is, whenever God does something in our life, we should give Him the praise because it's Him anyway, not us, right? Did you go to the buffet line of gifts in heaven and say, before you were born, and say, hey, Lord, I'd like this gift and this gift and this gift. Trust me, I'd have picked a few different ones. We probably all would have liked to have had a little bit of this, less and a little bit more of that, you know? Some of us wish our kids had a little bit less of this and a little bit more of that, right? A little bit less sarcasm, attitude, eye roll, more, yes, mother, whatever you say, mother, whatever you say, father. We don't have any experience with that at our household at all. Fear not. Right? But hey, you didn't ask for what gifts you have. You just came out with them. That's because God gave them to you, right? And so we need to give Him praise for what He does in our life. And then lastly, how can we apply it? We need to speak theologically correct about what God does. Hey, again, not about us. It's all about Him. All right? So look, I don't know where this lands with you today. But I know we all have a tendency to be not like Hannah. And we all need to be a little bit more like Hannah. She serves as a great example of what it looks like to respond rightly when God works in our life, because He's working in our life every single day all around us. The fact that we were able to get up this morning, we got air to breathe, hey, we've got a roof over our heads, and we've been able to worship freely here today, those are all blessings, and there's so many more. And so let's, kind of the challenge this week is, let's respond correctly like Hannah does when we see God working in our lives.
Thanks for listening. For more information about Valley Grove, visit our Facebook page or website, valleygrovechurch.org.